Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A school voucher program comes under fire at the Florida Capitol.
There are discriminatory admission practices that are not allowed if you're benefiting from a tax credit program and or public funding.
Also tonight, there may be a very compelling reason for animal control and child abuse investigators to start talking with each other more often.
The sexual abuse of animals is the number one predictor for the sexual abuse of children.
We'll also get the latest on the push to mandate a moment of silence before each school day and why some think that's not such a great idea. We'll also get another update on snowbird Iowans who will be caucusing in Florida tonight. It's the kickoff of week four in the nine-week Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Florida's tax credit scholarship program has come under fire after an Orlando Sentinel investigation reported participating private schools have exclusionary policies toward LGBTQ students. Ryan Daly reports the controversy has intensified the school choice debate, and a rally is planned for the Capitol tomorrow.
The scholarship program gives tax breaks to corporations that donate money, which is then given by the state to parents to take their kids to private schools. But the Orlando newspaper found a percentage of private schools, mostly religious, had language in their policies that discriminates against LGBTQ students. Democratic Representative Anna Escamani of Orlando has been among those leading the charge in calling for corporations to stop donating to the scholarship program.
That was actually a follow-up to a series they did in August of 2019, highlighting discriminatory practices in private schools who benefit from Florida's tax credit scholarship program, which is a publicly based funding that diverts what corporations would pay in taxes into a tax credit where they directly divert these funds towards this private school system.
Escamani describes the Sentinel report as having found a slew of private schools that are engaged in discriminatory behavior.
Doing in-depth research on handbooks of these schools, finding over 100 schools that had discriminatory practices, some quite explicit, specific towards same-sex dynamics, whether it was with a child or with their family, and others that also included anti-trans youth policies.
Escamani spoke about some of the companies that have since pulled their donations to the scholarship program.
Since those new reports came out, we've seen corporations make the decision to end their participation in the tax credit scholarship program based on their values. These are corporations who participate in pride events across the state. They have inclusivity policies within the organization. These companies value diversity and inclusion. They see it as not just an altruistic vision for the future, but they see it as the reality of today and as an economic driver.
At the heart of the reignited debate concerning the tax credit scholarship program is whether or not the money ever becomes public. A state appellate court in 2016 upheld a prior ruling that the program didn't violate the state constitution. Statewide teachers union, the Florida Education Association, filed the suit claiming the program diverted public funds to go to religious institutions. The First District Court of Appeals opinion stated the FEA had no standing to claim that. Still, Escamani feels there's legal precedent that's in favor of her argument.
Federal courts across the country have long recognized that governments may impose conditions on those who receive federal funds or tax benefits, including those which limit the recipient's speech, along restrictions to bar discrimination. So there is case law out there that at the very least says that there are discriminatory admission practices that are not allowed if you're benefiting from a tax credit program and or public funding.
The Orlando representative filed a bill prior to the start of session that says admission to a participating private school couldn't be barred based on sexual orientation or gender identity, but it was never scheduled for a hearing. Meanwhile, supporters of the scholarship program are pushing back, saying the pressure put on corporations to stop their donations hurts all recipients of the scholarships. Anna Day is a teacher at a private school that participates in the tax credit scholarship program. She also has two children who are recipients of the scholarships.
I do have two boys that currently receive DEPA for students. They are in 7th and 8th grade, respectively, and they have excelled in private school. Honestly, I believe that is imperative to have the ICPA tax credit scholarship because there are many parents who are in need and they just can't afford to send their child to private school and they don't do well in public school for one reason or another.
Day says factors like class size in public schools can jeopardize one-on-one instruction time that some students need to optimize learning.
Private school, the classrooms are smaller, so therefore when they need the extra help, they have that opportunity in comparison to when they were at public school, it was a little bit more strenuous.
Day teaches at Piney Grove Boys Academy in Lauderdale Lakes. She says her school is inclusive of all students and feels criticisms of the scholarship program lumps in all schools as being discriminatory. She doesn't support any kind of discrimination, but thinks threatening the program's funding harms students.
I believe that while maybe there are some that have made misguided choices, yes, they deserve to be reprimanded. Yes. Thing is, by removing the funding, the only person you're hurting is the kids. And they didn't do anything to deserve that.
Day is going to make the trip up to Tallahassee Tuesday for a rally in support of the scholarship program.
I'm going to be there along with fellow colleagues, classmates, from several different schools, actually.
That rally is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. at the Capitol. I'm Ryan Daly.
Florida lawmakers want child protective investigators to work with animal control officers. Robbie Gaffney has that story.
According to a state analysis, people who abuse animals often abuse children as well. Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book has long been an advocate of abused children.
This is an area that I have focused on most of my adult life as a child advocate, a former classroom teacher, and a survivor of childhood sexual abuse myself.
Now Book is backing a proposal that would require cross-reporting between child and animal abuse agencies. Under the proposal, any child protective investigator who goes to a home and suspects animal abuse would report it to animal control, and any animal control officer who suspects child abuse would report it to the Department of Children and Families. Book says this cross-reporting will help prevent further child abuse.
We know that there is a huge correlation between child sexual abuse and animal abuse, and so training each one, animal control workers and DCF workers, to be able to cross-report and identify so that we can really ensure that children and our furry friends are being kept safe.
Kate McFall is Florida State Director of the Humane Society. She spoke in support of the bill during a Senate committee meeting.
The sexual abuse of animals is the number one predictor for the sexual abuse of children.
McFall also supports a portion of the bill that increases the penalty for people who sexually abuse animals. Right now, it's a misdemeanor, but under the proposal, it would be a third-degree felony. She says that's the penalty enforced in 22 other states.
Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, and many more. Unfortunately, it's much more common than most people would believe or care to think about.
The proposal passed its last committee stop in the Senate and is heading to the floor. There is no House version. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Florida House leaders are touting their proposed budget for being lower than spending plans offered by the Senate and Governor Ron DeSantis. While the legislative packages include hundreds of millions of dollars lawmakers want to bring home to their districts, the House last week released a $91.37 billion proposal for the 2020-2021 fiscal year, an initial step as legislative leaders prepare to negotiate a final spending plan in March. The Senate proposal, also released last week, totaled just under $92.9 billion, while DeSantis in November released a $91.4 billion plan. House Speaker Jose Oliva Republican of Miami Lakes, said his chamber's proposal provides teacher pay raises, augments child welfare and prison workers, and offers lower per capita spending than the current year's budget. Still to come on Capitol Report, a proposed measure would stop children under the age of 18 from being placed in adult detention centers while awaiting their trial. Proponents say it'll be safer for them.
Children that are kept in adult facilities are more likely to be assaulted, sexually abused, are at higher risk of suicide.
Some lawmakers worry requiring a moment for reflection at the beginning of the school day could single out non-Christian kids.
I worry that when you do this moment of silence, it puts students who are from a different faith or atheists, as we heard, in an uncomfortable situation.
Expat Iowans in Florida will be caucusing tonight in places like St. Petersburg.
Iowans of a certain age love to spend the winter in Florida.
And a man who helped engineer Republican dominance in Florida and elsewhere now mourns what he says is the end of the traditional GOP.
This nationalist, authoritarian, cult figure treatment of Trump has also opened the door to a party that's become defined by cruelty.
Current Florida law requires kids being charged as adults to be held in regular jail with adults while they wait for their trial. New federal standards that go into effect at the end of next year require minors to be held in juvenile detention centers with few exceptions. Blaise Ganey reports lawmakers are moving forward with a bill to make sure Florida is in compliance.
Leon County Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander is behind the bill. The measure would align Florida with changes made to the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act in 2018 by President Donald Trump. Southern Poverty Law Center's Policy Counsel Scott McCoy explains it.
It basically said if states want to continue to receive federal grant money for juvenile justice programs, they have to make it so that kids are held pretrial in juvenile facilities and not put in adult facilities.
McCoy likes the change.
It's an important change because it will likely keep many more children out of the adult jails and keep them in juvenile justice facilities where they have more safety and a better chance of getting programming and education and rehabilitation.
But that's not how Florida currently does things.
Under Florida law, if a child is transferred to adult court, the law says that child has to be held in an adult jail pending their trial.
Florida has prosecuted more than 16,000 children in adult court since 2009. McCoy says putting children in adult jail can be detrimental.
Children that are kept in adult facilities are more likely to be assaulted, sexually abused, are at higher risk of suicide.
A U.S. Department of Justice study found in 2005, 21% of inmate-on-inmate sexual violence victims were under the age of 18. Juveniles only make up 1% of all jail inmates. Alexander's bill would make sure children aren't put behind bars with adults unless a judge agrees it's necessary.
It says that kids won't be transferred to an adult jail if they are prosecuted as an adult, unless a judge makes a decision after a hearing and in writing that it is in the interest of justice that the child be held in the adult court.
The measure also requires if a judge does find it necessary for the child to be in adult jail, then he or she must review that decision every 30 days. That change would put Florida in line with the federal act and allow the state to receive grant money. The measure passed unanimously and now has two more committee stops. The Senate companion hasn't yet been heard. I'm Blaise Ganey.
Florida lawmakers say life is too busy, and sometimes kids need a break. They're hoping to help quiet the noise by requiring schools to start the day with a moment of silence. Regan McCarthy reports a Senate bill will get its second hearing tomorrow. Meanwhile, a House bill is getting its first hearing now.
Lady Lake Republican Senator Dennis Baxley is behind the proposal. It would require schools to pause for a 1 to 2 minute moment of reflection each morning. Baxley says teachers would not provide guidance on what students should do during that time, but his bill would encourage teachers to ask parents to discuss the time with their children.
The object there is simply to incentivize the teacher to let the parents talk about this period and how to use it, and encourage them to help their child use this moment of reflection in a way that's positive and comports with the thoughts and beliefs and practices of that family.
Baxley says a pair of rabbis brought the idea to him, and he says it's not intended to be a religious activity. But Boynton Beach Democratic Senator Lori Berman worries it could still single out children of minority faiths.
As someone who was one of six Jewish children in my entire elementary school, I worry that when you do this moment of silence, it puts students who are from a different faith or atheists, as we heard, in an uncomfortable situation.
Devin Graham is an atheist. She's the assistant state director of the group American Atheists, and she has two children who attend public school in Florida.
I am concerned that a moment of silence law, if passed, would encourage educators to engage in improper proselytization. There are no guidelines whatsoever for teachers on how to discuss the moment of silence in a way that does not promote religious practice. As mentioned, children that choose not to participate or that outwardly object to any unnecessary evangelization could be subjected to bullying. We all want what's best for our kids, and this bill just isn't it.
Graham says the proposal is clearly religiously driven.
It's difficult for me to reconcile how this time of meditation can be perceived as anything but religious in nature when it explicitly amends a statute entitled Permitting the Study of the Bible and Religion, section 1003.45.
But Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell argues the measure has nothing to do with religion.
I don't think this practice is in any way based on a religion or any kind of religious practice. I think it's a good practice for people in general just to take a moment and to stop and to concentrate on something different. And I think a wonderful time to do that is the beginning of your day.
I'm Regan McCarthy.
You've been hearing a lot about the Iowa caucuses on NPR today. Last week, we told you about some Iowan snowbirds who, for the first time ever, were going to caucus in Pensacola. We now check in with Bradley George to find out how Iowans in the Tampa Bay area will also be remotely taking part in the candidate selection process.
Every 4 years, Cedar Rapids, Iowa gets a lot of attention from presidential candidates.
Hello, Cedar Rapids. So are you all ready to make a revolution?
Hello, Cedar Rapids!
And if you have trouble with Buttigieg, feel free to just call me Pete.
That's Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Joe Biden on recent visits to the city, where they were trying to woo voters like longtime Cedar Rapids resident Donna Winter.
I have been to events with all the top candidates at least three times.
Winter is a retired school teacher. She and her husband escape the Midwest cold every year by spending a couple of months at Isla del Sol in St. Petersburg. That's where I met her on a recent morning, where she was getting ready to watch the impeachment trial on CNN. Winter loves politics, and she's a committed caucus goer. She says she hasn't missed one since 1976.
You actually know some of the people who are there. That's one of the really nice things of caucuses. It's a community coming together.
That thing Donna Winter loves about the caucus, the community gathering, presents some challenges, says David Redlosk. He's a political science professor at the University of Delaware and an expert on caucus history.
The caucus is really a party meeting. It's not an election. It's not a primary. It was never meant to be.
Usually, the annual gathering picks local and state party leaders. But every fourth year, scores more Iowans show up for these meetings. There's no ballot. Instead, they stand at a corner or a room with fellow supporters of their preferred presidential candidate. And that's what gets counted.
As a consequence, for most of the history of this, no one has really cared that much about whether people, Iowans who don't happen to be in Iowa, could participate or not.
That means if you're an Iowan and you're a Florida snowbird, the only way you could participate is to go back to Iowa and show up at a caucus site. Kate Payne is a reporter at Iowa Public Radio and co-host of the Caucusland podcast.
Why the Iowa Democratic Party is really putting a focus on this year really comes in the wake of 2016.
That's when Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders by the closest margin in caucus history. And the Democratic caucuses were plagued by long lines and accusations of fraud. Payne says the Democratic National Committee gave Iowa an ultimatum. The 2020 caucuses must be more accessible to Iowans outside the state.
Iowans of a certain age love to spend the winter in Florida and in Arizona as well. And of course, every year there are college students who are outside of the state. And those folks, initially, if they couldn't make it back in the middle of winter, they were out of luck.
So for the first time, the state Democratic Party is holding caucuses for this Iowa diaspora. When Donna Winter heard about this plan, she wanted in. She's organizer of a Florida satellite caucus at St. Andrew Lutheran Church, just a few miles from her St. Pete condo.
I did not know another Democrat from Iowa anywhere in Florida. It was a leap of faith, but I thought surely there have to be.
Turns out there are plenty of Iowa Democrats in Florida. About 100 registered with the state party to show up in St. Petersburg. In Florida, caucuses are also scheduled in Gulf Breeze and Port Charlotte, and in other cities like Chicago, New York, Paris, even Tbilisi, Georgia. Journalist Kate Payne says, while it may be great that more Iowans will get to caucus, it doesn't solve the biggest problem. A caucus is a meeting that could stretch well into the night.
And so for people who can't take that time out of their day for any reason, you know, whether they're working or maybe they have small kids or maybe they need extra transportation help or accessibility needs, there's still a burden on those people.
For now, Iowa Democrats are focusing on this new kind of caucus and helping residents who aren't in Iowa help pick their party's presidential nominee. St. Petersburg organizer Donna Winter says she's ready for this new experiment, but she hopes some of her fellow Iowans will pitch in with registration and parking.
So I'm pleading with the people who I don't know, but help.
It'll be typically nice Florida weather for those Iowans at the St. Pete caucus. Tonight's forecast for Cedar Rapids, rain and snow, and a low of 27. I'm Bradley George in St. Petersburg.
For Florida lawmakers, it's a full calendar of activity tomorrow. Here's Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. Cities and counties may soon lose their power to regulate vacation rental properties. A bill would preempt regulation of those rentals to the state. Supporters point to the property rights of those who use websites like Airbnb to rent out homes or rooms. Critics contend that such rentals often turn into commercial operations in residential areas. The state law that authorizes red light cameras may be repealed, along with the state's long-standing no-fault auto insurance system. The system requires motorists to buy personal injury protection coverage. A House education panel will consider a proposal that would require public schools to hold a moment of silence each day. Interior design, hair braiding, and other professions may soon have fewer regulations attached, making them easier to get into. Voters may get a stab at a proposed constitutional amendment that would repeal the public campaign financing system available to statewide political candidates. Time limits may soon be lifted for child sex abuse victims to initiate criminal cases against their abusers. And finally, Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book will be joined by state leaders for her annual Capitol Walk for Child Safety. The event brings attention to child abuse survivors like Book and her Lauren's Kids Foundation. The historic Capitol building will be lit in teal Tuesday and Wednesday nights for child sexual abuse awareness. That's some of what's coming up at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, while Capitol Report doesn't often veer into presidential politics, when Republican strategist Firebrand Rick Wilson stopped by for a chat, we just couldn't resist. Wilson, who helped guide state and national GOP candidates in policy for some three decades, believes that party has essentially ceased to exist.
There is no Republican Party now. It is the Trump Party. They have abandoned fiscal discipline, the fundamental underpinning of the modern GOP. Donald Trump has a $2 trillion unfunded tax liability hanging out there from the tax bill. $2 trillion. We're spending over $1 trillion in deficit spending every year. We're borrowing money from the Fed at the same rate we did during Obama, which at the time Republicans were losing their minds. We can't keep borrowing all this money. So the economy is on this sugar high right now that will inevitably fail.
Under President Trump's America First policy, Wilson sees the U.S. backing away from its traditional role of world leader.
Foreign policy, we were the strong country. We were the country that held alliances together and maintained our security by making the world more secure. Donald Trump is an arsonist. He has burned our relationships with our allies to the ground while making sure that our enemies in this world and the people that represent enormous dangers to our future, both Russia and China, and North Korea, are treated as if they are more important than our traditional alliances.
And in place of coherent policy, Wilson sees a cult of personality.
This nationalist authoritarian cult figure treatment of Trump has also opened the door to a party that's become defined by cruelty and defined by behavior. They get angry about being called boomer rubes, but they're cool with putting kids in cages.
Perhaps most perplexing to Wilson is the appeal of President Trump to so many who self-identify as deeply religious.
The evangelical side of the party has made their deal with the devil. He is their golden calf. He is an idolatrous figure, and they've decided that judges are worth having a man who is a serial adulterer, a guy who screws porn stars, pays off women, has cheated on every wife he's ever had, has engaged in behavior that is so low and immoral. He was the owner of casinos. All these things as a package, you can't just say, oh, he's a flawed vessel. It shocks me that there is not a greater degree of moral clarity about him among evangelicals.
Still, Wilson says the present Republican Party, a base comprised so largely of older white men, is relentlessly shrinking.
That will be over soon. Those folks, demonstrably, who follow them, are not voting in the Republican pattern that was a long historical pattern. They're breaking away. They're more independent or non-party affiliated or third-party affiliated. And they're also not ideologically Trump.
But he's quick to add, all of this does not necessarily mean bright days ahead for Democrats.
Sometimes they'll get a Barack Obama or a JFK or a Bill Clinton, and then they can wash away their incompetence in the mechanics of politics. So then they'll feel for 4 or 8 years like, oh my God, we really killed it. Man, we crushed it. And then we come along and eat their lunch again when it's just like the normal battlefield. Well, unfortunately for them in this race, there is no Barack Obama. There is no Bill Clinton. There is no JFK in this field. Not a one of them. I say this a lot. Donald Trump can't win this election, but the Democrats can sure lose it.
Longtime Republican strategist and self-avowed never-Trumper Rick Wilson with a bit of national politics here on Capitol Report. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Bradley George. Our technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org.